Okay, 3, 2.
3, 2, hit it!
It's time to double down with Max and Stacey on Sputnik Radio. It's New Year's Eve, and who better to celebrate than Max and Stacey? Stacey, I'm loving the sequins. You're looking very optimistic for 2020. I can see myself a million times. It's like I have the eyes of a fly. I sense Giabo is in the air in 2020, and I am so into it. I'm so ready. The global insurrection against banker occupations gaining traction. We introduced it. We had the concept first. Others are mimicking us. Others are imitating us. But we called this years ago, and now it's coming into full fruition around the world. The occupation against the banksters!
Giabo, global insurrection against banker occupation. You coined that, I believe it was back in 2010 or 2011 when the first wave of uprisings against the banker occupation started. Remember, there was a whole wave around the world from Spain into the Arab world and Latin America back then. And now there is the same thing again. We see protests in Lebanon, Iran, in Hong Kong, in Spain again, in Haiti, and Venezuela.
Well, so, you know, it's a variation on Occupy Wall Street. Remember, that was huge.
Yeah.
In the wake of the 2008 global financial crisis, the GFC, as it became known. And then so global insurrection against the banker occupation was kind of a twist on that to give the global nature to it, because everybody at the time was thinking their local conflict was unique and that the world had to see what's happening locally. But now I think people are understanding that this is a global phenomenon. Central banks work together to oppress and suppress, and the uprisings, whether it's in Lebanon, Hong Kong, Iran, in Chile, all over the world.
Colombia.
Every day there's somebody new on the map, another flashpoint. People are coming to the understanding that the problem is with all this fiat money that the central banks print up by the trillions to disenfranchise the common people.
The people, right. And of course, we're looking ahead to 2020. Where does Giabo go? I think 2020 will be the year of doubling down, not just double down this great podcast, but doubling down. The central banks are going to double down on their bad ideas.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely correct, that the central banks will double down on their bad ideas. And their primary bad idea was to artificially lower the cost of borrowing to zero. That was idea bad number one. Idea bad number two was going to negative interest rates. That was an awful idea. And people in Germany now are freaking out. There's a bank in one of the regions of Germany that are now being charged 0.5% just to have your money at that bank. You're being guaranteed a loss to store your savings at the bank. So there is a revolt of savers in Germany. And of course, Germany is a country of savers and they like to save money. They don't want to have money confiscated with a negative interest rate. So that's a doubling down on a bad idea. So expect, as we might guess, negative rates going even more negative. Remember, Michael Hudson was saying, where might they go?
He said they would go to negative 25%. He does spend a lot of time in Germany. And in fact, Der Spiegel, which is their biggest circulating magazine, ended the year with an amazing cover of a German family looking very sad and the little kid holding a Monopoly board in his arm. And they're saying that this is like the death, the slow death of German wealth caused by negative interest rates. So the other thing why we know that they're doubling down on bad ideas is that the central banks are even like starting to call each other out for, wow, I thought our ideas were bad. Yours are really bad. Whether it was Mark Carney this year in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, and he said, oh, you know, the U.S. dollar is toast and we got to get rid of that. And then we have a European Central Bank going negative rates and the New York Fed is like, ooh, that's a really bad idea. It's so bad that we just might try it if things get really bad, but that's a really dumb idea. And so if we do that, that means the situation is very bad.
Yeah, bad all around. Now, you point out here, I'm looking at the notes, that we've got protests, as we've said, Lebanon, Haiti, Chile, Colombia, Bolivia against the coup there, Hong Kong, Iran, all over the news is breaking out. And quote, from pork in China to onions in India, food prices are rising all over the world and economists are worried. So this is another aspect to this money printing. The money printing would normally lead to inflation, but we haven't seen price inflation for this extended period of money printing because it has created a global labor market. So even though prices might go up on some stuff like education and health, prices for TVs and clothes have crashed. So the average person doesn't feel like their quality of life is getting destroyed. However, there's a point when food, agriculture, TVs, and clothes can't get any cheaper anymore. And labor, in fact, has bottomed out globally. And now we're starting to see labor go up, even in those places that are a dollar a day, they pay labor, it's now $2 a day. So that is now the ugly rearing head of inflation.
Well, Max, if you recall back in 2010, 2011, when the Giabo started, it was food price inflation in many parts of the world. Why were they suffering food price inflation? Well, they were suffering food price inflation because their own local currencies, their domestic national currency, collapsed against the dollar. Because back in 2008, 2009, during the financial crisis, there was a rush into the dollar as everybody closed all their bad debts and it was considered a safe haven. We've seen the same thing now over the past 2 or 3 years where the dollar is soaring against all these currencies. Many currencies in Latin America are down 50, 60% in the past 3 years. So they're suffering the consequences of that because everything is priced in dollars, essentially, in global trade.
Right. So central banks double down. So they go into more cheap money, more easing, more negative rates. Now, what's happening in some of these countries that have been really pushed to a point of despair with sanctions and by censoring things like the SWIFT network, they have created a new global payment system, which is now being popularized in Germany, in Russia, in, I believe, China as well. And this is now taking on the dollar. So the dollar is now going to lose its place. Maybe a theme for 2020. What do you think about this? Dollar place as world reserve currency starts to fall.
It was in 2019 that we saw Representative Brad Sherman from California. He represents one of the Los Angeles areas. And he said in the Congress twice so far this year that Bitcoin threatens to displace the dollar. Why, he said? Because it was a perfect settlement, a neutral settlements layer. So all trade could be settled on this without censorship. So he's seeing the writing on the wall. He's telling you, he's signaling you that this is in the works. So yes, there will be perhaps nation states or various regions. Germany and France, for example, have worked on basically a SPV, a special purpose vehicle, sort of alternative to the US dollar as settlements layer. But there will be some alternatives, but it'll ultimately be gold and Bitcoin that is the new recognized by nation states as a settlement layer.
Right. So gold, after a 5 or 6 year dull, bearish kind of sideways, nowhere trend, could break out, right? And if it breaks out and it catches up to where it should be with all of the debt that's been increased, and that's usually a good way to judge where gold might be, you're talking $2,500 an ounce, $3,000 an ounce just to catch up.
Well, in fact, at the end of the year, Max, some trader on Wall Street took out a massive bet that, in fact, within 18 months, gold would hit $4,000. He placed a bet, or she placed a bet, worth $1.75 million. If gold does not hit $4,000 in the next 18 months, they'll lose the $1.75 million in the options trade. But if it goes over that, if it goes over $4,003, they will make $498 million. So this is a big bet on a big move in gold.
Right. So speculators, professional speculators, and I think we'd call this a professional speculator, they're putting up $1.5 million on a gold option with a $4,000 strike price. You're saying that guy is a pro and he's willing to risk $1.5 million on gold hitting $4,000. So that's could be the tip of the spear. You could see a lot more spec money moving into gold, silver. And I think Bitcoin is now officially a store of value and a safe haven asset like gold and silver. So Bitcoin as well, you could see 2020 break out of its doldrums as well and hit new all-time highs. I think that's a good bet to make. Talking about countries getting nervous and all this, Poland airlifted 8,000 gold bars in a James Bond-like rescue from London. What's happening there?
Well, that was an interesting story at the end of the year, and it's a theme that, in fact, Max and Stacey triggered. It was Max Kaiser himself with his film about the Brown's bottom when we covered the fact that, in fact, Germany did not hold any of its gold, that we revealed that. And of course, that triggered the German people to demand that their nation get their gold back from New York, where it was held. And now Poland has just retrieved its gold from the Bank of England. But again, this is that theme of gold is going to be seen as a safe haven. And this is because central banks are going to continue to double down when the Central Bank of America, the Federal Reserve, does go negative. That's the end of the dollar. And this is what people are preparing for. I saw Neil Kashkari, who is the head of the Minneapolis Fed, he was out at the end of the year suggesting that the Fed, the actual Fed, who is supposed to be independent, is not supposed to get involved in any fiscal policy or picking winners or losers, even though they obviously pick winners with their Cantillon effect. But the Fed might intervene and start redistributing wealth. In fact, putting money directly into the hands of public and private sector spenders, he's suggesting, could be in the works.
The helicopter money.
Yes.
Well, we'll see how that comes. I see a headline here that's quite intriguing. America is returning to Latin America. Oh, it reminds me of the Confessions of the Economic Hitman. Remember that book? Then it was Chavez came around and it seemed like South America had a new hero, and now he's gone. And what, America's back in Latin America?
Well, clearly there was a coup in Bolivia at the end of the year. They helped get rid of the left-wing government in Brazil and install Jair Bolsonaro, who is a very right-wing leader. Venezuela is on the hook for perhaps being overthrown this year in 2020. We still have Elliot Abrams in the Trump government. He is well known for bringing in death squads to Central America back in the 1980s under Reagan. He's still around with his death squads. He brought death squads to Iraq. Remember that wave of death squadery back in 2004 and 2005?
Death squadery.
Yeah.
Yes. Who could forget?
Yeah. And everybody in alt media pointed out, hey, this looks a lot like what happened in El Salvador in the 1980s. And Elliot Abrams happens to be in charge of Iraq policy.
Right. Now, the huge difference, I think, now is you've got in Argentina and Venezuela the introduction of Bitcoin, which gives people self-sovereignty and it's unconfiscatable. So that wasn't around before. And that is going to give people a way to escape some of this hellacious occupation coming from the north. And finally, on the election 2020, Trump versus Biden / Buttigieg.
These are my questions. So I am proposing that this is going to be a big theme, Max, in 2020. There's an election coming up in November. And the question is whether or not the DNC and the Democratic voters are going to choose the neoliberal option, Biden, Buttigieg, or Bloomberg, or will they go with the left-wing version, Bernie, Warren, Tulsi, or Yang? So these are the radical ideas on either side. It's radical, I think, to stick with neoliberalism because the GIABO, the global insurrection against banker occupation, is about that. The uprisings in Chile and Colombia in particular are there saying, like, this is the end of neoliberalism. We want it out. So what is the U.S. going to do? Are we going to continue for another 4 years? The choice we make, whether we choose a Biden, Buttigieg, or Bloomberg, or if we choose a Bernie, Warren, or Tulsi, or Yang on the other side, is, you know, the thing to look for in 2020.
Right. I like the way you've grouped them into those two categories. And, you know, the wild card here is that Joe Biden seems, you know, unstable, to put it mildly. And I think that's, he doesn't seem to want to, you know, leave stage, but there he is kind of causing a lot of, confusion up there. And that could be a kind of an interesting situation developing.
Well, when his teeth fell out on stage in 2019, I thought that was like it for him, but he's still the front runner at this point in time. But regardless, I think the ideas that Bernie, Warren, Tulsi, and Yang represent, it doesn't matter if they don't get it this time. It's still an amplification of what we saw introduced first in 2016. And I think it's like the Enlightenment or the French Revolution. Remember, the French Revolution followed 30, 40 years after those ideas were first introduced. And eventually this will finally give way when the boomers die out and the millennials and Generation Z take over.
That's right. 40 years back then is 4 months in internet time. So we could be hitting 2020 massive global insurrection against banker occupation. That's going to do it for this episode of Double Down with me, Max Keiser, and Stacey Herbert on Sputnik Radio. I'd like to thank our audience for tuning in during 2019. That means you'll be ready for 2020, right? Of course, you're all just dying to hear what's going to happen.
Got the Bitcoin.
You got it, baby. The year of doubling down. We'll have a great rest of the new year. Stay safe. Be happy. Get ready for Giabo. Until next week and next year. Bye, y'all.